Blog Talk Radio.
What is up, everyone? It is Friday Eve. Hopefully everyone is having a great day. A lot of stuff to get into tonight. The Suns took one last night to the Lakers, who got their first victory of the year. Steph Curry lost his mind last night. We will get into that as well. And maybe you remember them as those bums, the old Brooklyn Dodgers. Well, they're the L.A. Dodgers now, and they are in a hole to the Boston Red Sox. Boston's played like the best team in Major League Baseball all year, and they're continuing to play like the best team in Major League Baseball in this World Series. Like I said, up to zip against the Dodgers. We're just long ball hunting. Let me get into that a little bit. Kind of gets on my nerves. Like I said, welcome to the Cave Show. This is PLR. We are brought to you by the one, the only Maduro's Fine Cigar and Tobacco located on Alma School in Chandler Heights. That's 4991 South Alma School. Get in there. Let them know that PLR sent you. 10% off of any cigar purchase that you may have. They now serve beer and wine, and you can become a club member. Get a locker that backs up to a humidor. Never ever worry about your sticks going bad. That is Maduro's Fine Cigar and Tobacco, now serving beer and wine. Like I said, let them know the PLR sent you, and you can get 10% off of any cigar purchase that you have.
This is Elio Cobo with the Phoenix Suns, and I'm in the Cave with PLR.
Like I said, we got a big show today, a lot of topics. Have a guest coming on at a quarter after the hour. Kyle Fleeger, better known as Fleegs, from Suns Debate. We're going to break these Suns down. But before we get into all that stuff, call-in number is 917-889-7828. I do have my main man, Tony Capobianco, online with us. Also have a call. Thank you for your patience. This is the Cave Show. Who do I have the privilege of speaking with?
Hello, Paul. It's Lou once again.
Lou, what's up, my man? You have me and you have the Cuban cowboy, Tony Capobianco, online.
Hey, Tony.
Hello.
Well,
so the Red Sox look like the best team in baseball all year?
So far.
They look like the best team in baseball on night one. They look like the best team in baseball on night two. Am I supposed to be fooled into thinking that come Friday night they're no longer going to look like the best team in baseball?
I mean, I've seen it happen before where their teams have been down 2-0 and they've come back to win the World Series, so I'm not giving up on the Dodgers just yet. You know, I see even the Yankees have been on both ends of that spectrum. They were up 2-0 against the Dodgers in 81 and came back to win, and they were down against Atlanta in 96 at home, and they lost those in blowouts, but they came back to win anyway. So I don't think I'm going to put the nail in the coffin for the Dodgers. I think they can turn around things at their own ballpark, and I think Boston may have a tougher time. So we'll just have to wait and see.
Tony, you were out in Boston. I don't want to say put the nail in the coffin, but it sure does look like they bought the coffins.
Well, let's put it this way. This is probably one of the few World Series where both teams have drastic climates. It's cold as hell in Boston right now. Like, you have to, like, a leather jacket and a scarf is not good enough over there. And it's still 88 degrees in L.A. And everyone does well in heat, especially at night. The idea that the Dodgers have to not only sweep all their home games and then win one of two in that freezing tundra again, I don't see it happening, especially when their best pitcher is average in the postseason. and they're taking in a series against a team who does not have a starting pitching disadvantage in any of the games. It's going to be a gentleman's sweep at best.
The one thing that I've noticed, and I think it's going to be to the detriment of the Dodgers if they don't change something, they are long ball hunting. There's no get the ball in play, move the runner, do this, do that. Almost small ball. And hopefully it gets out of the yard. That's one. Two, and I'm saying because I think the Red Sox are doing that. Two, I know that analytics play a large part in baseball. I really, truly do. And I know that every left-handed pitcher to left-handed batter, this guy hits 260 against this guy when he's, you know, batting righty in games on that side of the Mississippi. I understand all that stuff. But at what point are the Dodgers just going to say, look, I don't give a damn if this guy hits lefties or not. I'm putting in this guy that hits, period. Well, Tony, when does that come back into play?
Hopefully game three, because they got to make starters out of Cody Bellinger. And maybe Max Muncy needs more run. Cody Bellinger needs to be a starter. This idea where we're going to start Kike Hernandez in center field, who has only one hit, and if it's not one, maybe two, but definitely one hit, and that one hit was a home run. That's the only thing that's keeping his batting average in the postseason from being zero. It's asinine. This is how they're going to lose. Like, it doesn't matter how much worse Bellinger or Jock Peterson or Max Muncy are at hitting lefties. They're better at hitting anybody than Kike Hernandez and even David Freese at this point. Like, those guys need to have four at-bats if the Dodgers are going to have a chance at home.
You're not getting an argument from me. I'm watching this. And I'm watching a master. You know, I'm watching a master at work in J.D. Martinez, and I'm watching him constantly figure out a way to put the ball in play. Things that it should be, you know, a jam shot on him, he's fighting that ball off and going with it and putting it in play and driving in runs. And then on the flip side, I'm seeing Dodger batters get jammed up, try to pull a ball and either strike out or hit the ball right to somebody. I know these are all major leaguers. I know all major leaguers are asked to do the same thing over and over. But you're telling me that on shifts, and you're telling me that in certain positions, these guys can't absolutely positively can't lay down a bunt and just get something going? I mean, I know we have egos and we're macho, but they can't do that to get something going to win a World Series?
I mean, no one in that lineup is fast enough to reach base on a bunt. Even though
you know what,
the left side of the field is not as good as anyone else's, it's still enough to get people out on bunts.
Yeah, you know what? I disagree with that. If the third baseman is playing shortstop and you push a bunt down the third baseline and you can't make it to first, there's something wrong with you. That's a
you
problem.
You mean on that?
Because,
shifts like that,
exactly.
That makes sense. But what? All right, so that works. What are you going to do next? I mean, you're not going to bunt on shifts your way to a run. Like, eventually, you're going to get guys who do that, get on base, but won't do much about it because eventually they got to swing at an actual pitch and they'll be ready to get them out, especially the Sox pitching.
True. But at least now you're putting some pressure on the pitcher saying, if I bring up someone and a shift is on and there's nobody out, now there's at least a runner on first with nobody out as opposed to strike one, strike two, strike three, next. And that's all I'm saying. Whereas Boston, they get the ball in play. So, I honestly, Lou, I hear you. And I think some of that comes from the fact that you really just hate the Dodgers. And I thought it was kind of funny because when I was talking to Derek Mancini the other day.
The Red Sox,
I'm sorry. And the Dodgers, because when I was talking to Derek the other day, I remember this from a long time ago. The Dodgers used to be the Brooklyn Dodgers. And the Yankees consistently kicked their backside in the World Series. And the Dodgers finally got one. I want to say it was 51, 52, something like that. I don't remember. But they finally, no, 51 was the Giants. But they finally got one from the hated Yankees. So, technically, a Yankee fan probably hates both these teams because you hated the Dodgers when they were in Brooklyn, and you hate the Red Sox just because they're the Red Sox. So this can't be easy for you either way, but I'm hearing in my in your voice, and maybe I'm wrong, but you hate the Red Sox a little more.
Exactly. You know how us Yankee fans feel about the Red Sox every time they get to the World Series and whatnot. And, you know, we don't get there because, you know, we could have been there. We should have won this. We could have won this series, but Boston was just too tough. And being that they're our chief rival, you know, that makes us even more ticked off.
Don't they have 20 more World Series?
They're better than the Yankees in every way. In this century, they're better than the Yankees.
And
that's what pisses them off
the
most.
Yeah.
Especially now in Boston, when no matter who's playing at Fenway Park, you will hear a Yankee suck chant. Or maybe an entire innings worth. It doesn't really matter who they're playing or what part of the day it is. That's like a model in Boston. And now that they have a franchise that is head and shoulders better than the Yankees have ever been in this century, that's what pisses them off the most.
You know, last I checked, though, the Red Sox could win, run off 19 World Series in a row and still be one behind the Yankees. Last I checked, I could be wrong.
I
think that number is just about it. Yeah, because they've only won six, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yes, but who's going to hold what happened in the 20s and 50s over people at a time where we're approaching this century's 20s?
Yeah, you're not lying.
Like, hey,
you're
because
not
what
lying.
Happened in
right.
the 50s, I'm better than you. No one does that in any sport.
Well, that's the deal with baseball. Tony, are you out in L.A. for the next set of games?
No, I got my my World Series bill at Fenway.
I'm back
in sunny Miami.
Still going to go.
Too
cold
in
Boston.
I don't miss it at all.
There you go.
I still think the Dodgers didn't make a series out of it.
So do I. They're going to make a series out of it for us to watch.
Like,
yeah,
maybe
you're right.
Get
I have
this game, but that's it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I said five. I'm sticking with five. Boston's proved me wrong all year.
Five.
I said five. I'm on record. I said it on the show on Tuesday.
Yes,
it was Monday. I said five.
You said five.
Yep.
Might be a sweep.
Hey, listen.
No.
I'll ask you guys something real quick. I've only got a couple minutes.
Yes.
I've only got a couple minutes here before I got to jump to a guest. Derek Carr was accused of crying when he got tackled.
Oh, please.
Is it? Let's just say he did. I don't care if he did or didn't. But let's just say he did. If he did, does it really matter?
Does anyone remember No Sean Moreno crying waterfalls during a national anthem?
Okay, no. See, here's the thing that's different. You can cry during the anthem. You can cry when your team wins.
So you did.
You can cry when your team loses. You can, but you're never supposed to cry when you're hurt. So let's just say he did cry because it did hurt when a 300-pound man fell on him. Is there a big deal with it?
I mean, it should be. But then it does kind of hurt when, you know, a linebacker is, pounding you almost to death. It's going to hurt.
The defensive lineman
does it matter?
Himself and is out for the year by falling on Derek Carr. That's the guy who's crying?
So, but does it matter? I guess that's my question.
Yeah,
I mean,
it doesn't
let's
matter.
Say he did cry. It doesn't matter. Does it? I mean, I know as gladiators, men have been conditioned so much to really make sure they don't cry or you poke fun at people. And we tell little boys, stop crying, you know, man up. Why are you crying like a girl? So they've been conditioned not to cry. So if he did cry, I mean, is it a big deal, really? Are we really making that big of a deal over this?
What matters,
I think we
is
are.
Their only win this season came against the Browns. Their best defensive tackle guy has been traded. Their best wide receiver has been traded. Their best running back's out for the year. John Gruden looks like a fool with 9 more years to go. And Derek Carr might get traded too because they're doing some like tanking thing, like Vic style. That's what matters. The fact that it's crying is just some ridiculous form of justification for the next move to come.
I hear you. Well, look, guys, I got to jump. I got our guests calling in. Real quick, Tony, give your information how everyone can get a hold of you.
You can catch my fantastic photography work on Twitter at Tony Capobianco. You can catch my World Series column on sportscave.com and my other Dolphin shenanigans at Dolphin Maven.
I love the word shenanigans. Thanks, bro. Appreciate it. All right, you guys. Appreciate it very much. On the line with me right now, the one, the only, the biggest Suns apologist you will ever find in your life. And I'm not playing with this. He is a Suns apologist. And better than that, I'm not even going to say who in particular he's the biggest apologist for. I'm sure that will come out as we go through this. On the Kerry Lackey Law Line, joining me on the Cave Show right now, this is the one, the only, Kyle Fleeger. You know him. It's Fleegs. Fleegs, what's up, buddy?
Oh, you know, just out here in these streets apologizing for my sons on a regular basis.
I hear you. But you know what? Let me go ahead and clean something up for you real quick. When you're going to say you're on the streets, you can't say you're out here on the streets. That makes it sound like you're coming from the mean streets of South Chandler. And there are no mean streets of South Chandler. When you're on the streets, you're out here on these streets. Out here on these streets. That's gives you a bit more street cred just to help you out a little bit.
Thank you. I need that, definitely.
And anytime. So I know I was teasing you last night. And just so everyone knows, I'm always adding Bender jokes to everything that Fleeks ever sends me a text on. So he sends me a text last night, said, are you at the game? He said, no, I'm watching it at home. And I said, of course, it's Bender there watching it with you. So there's a running joke I have. Every time he tells me he's doing something, I ask him, and that's his response to everything. Watching that game last night, I know it was a blowout. I know the Suns played well in the first quarter. I know they played even in the third and fourth quarter. But in the second quarter, the game got out of hand. That's where it got away. They were never really able to recover. What deficiency, let's start with that part first, stands out for you the most in how they let that game get away? And I'm picking on them more so last night than against the Nuggets and the Warriors, because when the Warriors play everyone, it seems like lately games get out of hand. So just last night, what is the deficiency you're seeing with this team that's going to be tough for them to overcome?
I see a couple of things. I see relying too much on wing players as lead ball handlers is probably the most identifiable problem when you see the offense stagnate. If you can identify a very quick problem, it's that they're trying to run the point through players that are traditionally playing off ball. So at best, they're putting themselves in a position to be doing maybe not their best skill at any given time. And that's not setting up our players for success. I think a lot of that has to do with Igor needing to dial in the rotations. I don't want to, it's 4 games, right? So we need to give him some time to see what pieces work well together. There's a lot of moving parts to this team in particular, a lot of new players getting minutes that didn't get minutes last year and vice versa. So, you know, second quarter specifically, what I see is Cannon at times becomes incapable of generating any penetration. And while he's a very adept 3-point shooter, he ends up putting up the offense in a stagnant mode, and they rely on players like Josh Jackson, who I've been really impressed with, to run the pick and roll. And it makes the offense very limited, and they're terrible at defense. So if you're going to be bad at defense, you've got to be good at offense the whole game.
You know, I agree with you 100% on that, because the game, that they won to start the season, and I know it was against Dallas, but the ball moved. The ball never stuck. Last night,
right,
it looked like the ball stuck a lot. And this is no knock on Jamal Crawford, because we know how good Jamal Crawford is, and we know what Jamal Crawford does. But he's into offense off the bench because what he can do to get his own shot off. I don't think he's the right point guard to get ball movement for this team. And I think that hurts this team actually when he's in a game. And I can't believe I'm actually saying that about someone whose game I actually love in Jamal Crawford.
Well, I think the problem, and I'm just going to give you a – I don't think this is a hot take. I don't want Jamal Crawford on the Suns. I have no interest in him on the Suns. I think he takes minutes away from ball handling opportunities from other players that are better than him. I think he does stagnate any time he's in the game. And you referenced opening night, 35 assists in that game, which is the most assists the Suns had had in 7 years in a single game. So – what's the difference? Well, one of the major differences is they're trying to incorporate a player whose style of offense, which you may love, Paul, but I don't. I'm overseeing 36-year-old guys. Don't bring Vince Carter in next. Let's stop playing Tyson Chandler. If we're going to lose games by 40, let's let Dragan Bender be out there embarrassing themselves instead of letting a 37-year-old be out there embarrassing himself. At least one of them is going to learn something to apply to the future.
I was almost with you till that very end. I think Tyson Chandler is in a good role backing up DeAndre Ayton, because I think DeAndre Ayton can learn something from Tyson Chandler. And I still think the best thing we can learn from Dragan Bender is that his best days will be played in the French European Class C League within the next 3 years. But I hear you with what you're saying with the other thing. And I guess that's why I was a proponent. And even though I still get cross-eyed for saying this, I was a big proponent of saying play Eli Okobo more minutes, because if you drafted him to be your point guard, this is the time to play him to let him get experience. Him sitting on a bench, him not dressing, is not going to give him the experience he needs to lead this team unless there's another move down the line plan. Now, I said last night to a friend of mine that works for the Four Letter, I would love to see Lonzo Ball in a Phoenix Suns uniform, because I think that's going to be a failed experiment in L.A., because LeBron James will never relinquish control of the ball, and Lonzo Ball is not an off-the-ball guard that's going to shoot consistently well enough to be an off-the-ball guard. But in saying I agree with – really?
We can get into the Laker portion of this. I think right now – Rajon Rondo is more likely to be replaced than Lonzo Ball is. And I think that Lonzo Ball is going to replace Rajon Rondo for the rest of the season coming up here soon in the starting lineup, because what you will see is LeBron makes very accurate, quick passes that if you're ready to shoot, you're ready to shoot. And if you don't shoot, you really ruin what they're trying to do offensively. And I agree with you, Lonzo, his shot's kind of funky looking. But if you look at his percentages, and more importantly, the gravity he draws, because he shoots with confidence, quickly, in rhythm, he plays really well. And then as an independent, he's every bit the ball handler Rondo is, every bit the passer. He's a very gifted passer, except he's better on defense, younger, plays at a better pace, and actually can shoot. I mean, I would love Lonzo Ball on the Suns too, but that's why I think the Lakers will never give him up.
Yeah, well, let's hope they will. We got a couple guys they can make a trade for, but they're just wing players again. Since we are, I think the Phoenix Suns should change their name right now to the Phoenix Popeyes, because we have a wing special going nonstop. The one, the only Kyle Fleeger Fleegs on with us here on the Cave Show on the Kerry Lackey Law Line. Fleegs, Devin Booker strained left hamstring. They haven't really said any great details on what's going to come up with the next few games with him yet. I don't like him running point consistently. You've alluded to that already. I like him being off the ball where he can do the most damage. But if they don't have a choice, would he be your choice to run point more than anybody else on the team?
Yes. I think Eliacobo needs minutes. I 100% agree with you on how they should wean out Jamal Crawford. I'm sorry, like, failed experiment. Give him $2.4 million if it's all guaranteed. Cut bait and let him go. Like, the Suns having Devin Booker run the offense so much really has detracted from his comfort shooting the three since game one. The more they've relied on him at point guard, the more his three-point shooting numbers have started to decrease. Now, it's a very small sample size, as we stat nerds would say, but you can tell that the more he handles the ball, the less his legs are there later in games. To the point you made, he just strained his hamstring. And hamstrings tend to, if you ask any or watch any sports shows and where they analyze the reason somebody gets a hamstring injury with some doctor, it's because of exhaustion. It's a fatigue injury. It's a stretching injury, right? Taking him off the ball a bit more. Although I do think he can handle it. I've been super impressed with the chemistry between Josh Jackson and DeAndre Ayton. That's been something that has stood out of all the kind of bad going on defensively, has been that those two have developed a bit of a chemistry. Josh Jackson is throwing some high-level passes. He's very creative with the ball, which I love watching. And his level of energy he brings to everything he's doing is infectious. I think Mikal Bridges needs more minutes, and I think he actually is a decent person to handle the ball. And I would give T.J. Warren some more time, because we've all seen the T.J. Warren who can score with the ball in his hands. But now that he's adding this element that he's a confident three-point shooter, like I said, you don't have to shoot 45%. You don't need to be Steph Curry. If you shoot 37% and you shoot a lot of threes with confidence, it's going to be beneficial for the type of offense Igor's trying to run. So give him the ball a little bit more and get the ball out of Booker's hands. And then I think adding Okobo minutes obviously solves that problem just naturally, although he certainly has a lot of work to do from a passing standpoint.
Correct. If you're forgetting what you're listening to, Trevor Ariza.
This is Trevor Ariza with the Phoenix Suns, and you're in the cave with PLR.
On the Kelly Lackey Law Line, the one, the only, Fleegs. Fleegs, okay, the one thing I knocked the Lakers about, and you'll see it up on an article on the Cave Show later tonight, is sometimes I don't know if the Lakers are an old team or a young team. Are they a team with LeBron, and LeBron is in this mix no matter what. So are they a team, though, with LeBron and Stevenson and JaVale and the old guys, or are they a Kuzma, Ingram, Ball, LeBron team? And last night while watching this game, it's funny because I was thinking, wow, which team are the Lakers? But now I'm starting to think, which team are the Suns? Are we going to, as you know, I got to have a contract, are the Suns going to say, hey, look, we know we're not a playoff team, but we want to gauge ourselves against other possible playoff teams. So let's run these young guys, but let's keep these vets like a Trevor Ariza coming in or starting to kind of keep everything moving smooth, a Tyson Chandler coming in to back up Aiden and show Aiden some defensive positions that you can be in during the game, which will help. But like, let's kind of not do the Jamal Crawford thing or the other vets. Let's let the young guys play. When I was saying that about the Lakers, you think I really should have been saying that about the Suns?
I'll tell you this. I think you're right on both counts. And I think that's true. I think it applies to both teams similarly. But with LeBron, he's always going to be an X factor. But if you isolate other than LeBron, LeBron wants to win right away. Devin Booker wants to win right away. Those are the cornerstone superstars. They have other high-level talent around them, DeAndre Ayton, Josh Jackson, Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram. So they're very similar, right, in a lot of ways. Two distinct benefits to playing the young guys, okay? And this is how I see it. One, you definitely may or may not agree with. One, I think, is an undeniable fact. First, I think that if you have a younger player, they're better. Josh Hart's a better player than Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Lonzo Ball's a better player than Rajon Rondo. Kyle Kuzma's a better player than the other wings that they have that they're playing that are, you know what I mean? So the same thing for the Suns. Like, Eliacobo's a better point guard than Jamal Crawford. He might not be a better scorer than Jamal Crawford, but he, when you have him on a roster, what he means to an offense and a defense with how many points you allow and score, Eliacobo's worth more than Jamal Crawford. And then the second part of that is that they're more fun, right? If you're trying, what are the Lakers' big plans? We all know what they're going to do. They traded Luol Deng. They cleared cap space for who? They want Anthony Davis. Everyone wants to be in the Anthony Davis Express, and the Suns have made it very clear next year when they clear some of the space off their books, they plan to be players in 2019. So if you're trying to attract free agents who are 23, 24, 25, 26 years old, do you really think they're going to be attracted by playing with a guy who's starting fights with Chris Paul and who is Michael Beasley and Lance Stephenson and, you know, these guys? Or do you think they want to play with players like Josh Hart and Lonzo Ball, who have swagger, who have a brand as a younger person, who bring energy and enthusiasm, Brandon Ingram? Like, that's what's going to attract the ADs to L.A. That's what's going to attract the high-level free agents, because we're not getting Anthony Davis. That's my – let's just be honest with ourselves in Suns land. But we're going to be going after some – there's going to be a lot of big-name free agents. And we might be able to get a player like Jimmy Butler. We might be able to get a big-time – free agent who, you know, can add to the depth that we have. A big-time point guard, right, might be helpful in free agency. So you're not going to allure those players by playing a bunch of old guys who try to play an old style of basketball, who are constantly barking at the younger guys. You're going to attract them by playing guys they want to play with.
You're 100% right. And at this point, I never thought in my mind that this would come out of my mouth. I actually miss Elfrid Payton.
Yeah, that haircut did him a service. He finally can see. That's helpful when you're playing point guard.
Yes. Couple more things before I know you got to jump out of here. Steph Curry's performance last night, and I don't want to just focus on last night. That's like the seventh or eighth time he's hit 11 threes in a game. It is. He has more threes this year than four other NBA teams. When you watch him play and you watch the Golden State Warriors play, and I hear, you know, Boston might give him a run or Toronto might give him a run or Denver, a young team, may push him a little bit harder, or if the Lakers can do this, they may. Is there any team conceivably that can beat the Golden State Warriors four times out of seven times if everyone on the Warriors is healthy?
So first of all, in terms of last night, my goodness, like the best shot was the one that didn't count, where he shot the underhand runner 100 feet in the air that came down and made it after they had blown the whistle in the 23-point first quarter. I mean, that man is an entirely different planet when it comes to basketball. And I heard the soundbite from Steve Kerr afterward where he said, we've never seen anything like this. And it's 100% true. Steph Curry has 10 three-point games where he's made 10 three-pointers or more. In the last 20 years, I want to say there have been 9 other people to make 10 three-pointers in a game. You know what I mean? So he has more than all of them combined. And so it's just, he's on another planet. And the Warriors are still going to add Boogie. They're playing, you know, a lot of like Jordan Bell and a lot of Damian Jones. Damian Jones is their starting center. They're going to replace him with Boogie Cousins. I mean, no, I don't think this year anyone can beat them. I think everyone's hoping that next year what happens is Boogie doesn't agree to re-sign when Kevin Durant goes to New York and somehow they lose both of those players, or Clay and KD in the same offseason. And I think that's everyone's best bet, which is why I don't think LeBron – really cares about winning right now, which is why I think they should be more focused on that. But, you know, the Warriors they're the greatest team we've ever seen assembled in terms of talent. There's no time you've ever put 5 team all NBA players on a basketball court together. And that's what they've done. And it's insane. And it's fun to watch. And we're so lucky to get to see it. And last night made me feel like I was taking it for granted, that I had almost gotten used to seeing this, that there's this guy jacking behind the back, crossover, 30-foot, fadeaway, 3-point shots with 5 seconds off the shot clock. And in your head, the moment he shoots it, you're like, that's in. Instead of, what are you doing? I mean, that's in. The me presuming he's going to make a turnaround or a pull-up 40-footer with 2 guys next to him in traffic, and that in my head, if it doesn't go in, I'm surprised. just shows me I'm taking that man for granted, and that team is on an entirely different stratosphere this year.
Hey, you know what? One thing real quick I should say, Kate, no one goes to New York unless you're just going there for a weekend to hang out and go to Soho and then get the hell out of New York, because the state tax is way too much and the city is always dark, and you should never dump garbage in the front of your house. You have to have a freaking alley. So that's one. And two, we all know Boogie's not going back, because he's going to prove he's old. He's going to prove he's a team player. He's going to get a ring, and he's going to move on. My question to you is, we have some teams like Oklahoma City that's 0-3, Lakers 1-3, Houston's 1-3. Out of those three, which one is going to have the harder time? I don't want to use the word recovering, because we're only, you know, five games in the season, but which one of those teams do you think, seed-wise, is going to have a harder time climbing past the upstart Nuggets and the upstart, you know, and the Utahs and those teams in the West?
I think Houston's going to be fine. I think that their style and system and talent that they have with the ball in its hands for most of the game is going to make sure they win enough games to make the playoffs, which is kind of how I'll define concern. I think each one of those teams expects to make the playoffs. I honestly think the team that's going to have the hardest time is going to be the Lakers, because I don't think they'll do what we talked about. I do think they're going to try to play Lance Stephenson. I do think they're going to try to play Michael Beasley. I do think they're going to try to play Rajon Rondo. I think that that's going to be counterintuitive to winning games, but I still think they'll be a borderline playoff team. Like, I think they're going to win somewhere between 47 and 50 games this year, the Lakers. And if they're on the lower end of that, because they do decide to play these veterans instead of their younger guys, I think they could end up missing the playoffs entirely.
There you go. Please tell everyone how they can get a hold of you.
Well, you know, I'm always at Suns Debate on Twitter. I frequent Valley of the Suns, and then with you, frequently getting in arguments about whether Dragon Bender is getting sent to Siberia or whether he's going to get some minutes in the next game.
Only if they're down by 40, which I'm hoping they won't be. But I honestly, all kidding aside, I know I give him a hard time. The Fleeks, I think his days are numbered. It doesn't look like the Suns are really interested in letting him do anything at this point if he's not proving it in practice anymore.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely has to, as Igor said, start to develop an elite skill right away, because he does have a lot of things he's good at, which is what I love about him, but he doesn't have anything he's elite at, which is a totally valid criticism.
So the Suns go on a road trip. They come back. They play San Antonio. So hopefully we can catch up after that, and let's see where the team is.
Yes, sir. Sounds wonderful.
All right, buddy. I appreciate the time, sir.
All right, you have a good one.
That's what you too. That's my man there, Kyle Fleeg of Fleeg.
This is Elio Cobo with the Phoenix Suns, and I'm in the cave with PLO.
So I want to talk about this crying thing a little bit more. And next time, I'm not sure, I don't have the date in front of me, but the next time I get Ed Smith on, and you know Ed, Easy Sports Talk Radio, every Saturday, NBC Radio here in Phoenix. Played professional football, NFL, played pro baseball. I really want to ask him about this crime, because here's the thing, and I'll tell you, I'm guilty of this. I've told my son before, come on, dude, man up, come on, get tough. But I don't know if I should keep saying that, because if it hurts, it hurts. If you cry, you cry. And it's weird, because I feel like I'm taking up for Derek Carr when I'm really not taking up for Derek Carr. I'm more taking up for the notion that who cares? Who cares if he cried? If it hurt, cry. So maybe we can leave him alone and leave this whole thing alone and tell this man, look, and tell any man, look, if it hurts you, man, and you cried, you don't have to explain it. Your brother doesn't have to get on the internet and explain it, on the Twitter and explain it. It's all good, man. Let those tears roll down your face.
Tomorrow's Friday. I'm ready. I hope you're ready. We're going to have a big show tomorrow. We're going to pick these football games. Make sure you're following us on social media, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, fan page, at The Sports Cave, Cave's always with the K. Website, thesportscave.com, Cave is always with the K. Get me directly on the Twitter, PLR on sports. Thanks to good friend Lou for calling in, Tony Capobianco, the Cuban Cowboy, and of course, Fleegs from Sun's Debate. All called in via the Carrie Lackey Law Line. Until tomorrow, everyone have a good Thursday night. Be safe. This is The Cave Show. This is PLR. You have a good Thursday.